1, 2, 3. Testing 1, 2, 3.
Good afternoon, everybody. We're about to start, so if I could ask you to be seated. And I would also invite the working group members that are not sitting at the table, if you want to, please come and join. And even to add to that, those who are sitting at the back of the room, don't be afraid, you can come closer, we won't bite you. So I have been informed that the recording has already started. Looking at Barry to my left, do we have any remote participants?
This is Jim Pykoff.
Good afternoon or good morning, Jim.
And David Heasley.
Hello, David. My name is Thomas Rickert, and I'm the working group chair. And I would like us to do a little roll call, and we're going to do it in a different fashion than we usually would, by moving around the table, and I'm asking everybody to briefly state their name and whom they represent.
Kieran Malancharyville with Silverberg, Goldman, and Bykoff here representing the IOC.
Alan Greenberg, at large advisory committee and liaison to the GNSO.
Chuck Gomes from the registry stakeholder group.
Osvaldo Novoa, GNSO Council, ISP constituency.
Ilya Bazlyankov, registrar's constituency.
Hello, Nobel Nakatani, Interpol. I'm trying to understand the process of the this issue. Thank you.
Stefan Hankins, International Committee of the Red Cross. Thank you.
Charlotte Lindsay from the International Committee of the Red Cross.
Christopher Rossi from the International Federation of Red Cross and Red Crescent Societies.
Aubrey Doria, in this context, member of the NCSG Policy Committee.
I'm Robin Gross. I'm the chair of the Non-Commercial Stakeholder Group.
David Roach-Turner. I'm from WIPO.
John Berard from the GNSO Council and an interloper for the working group.
David Maher, Registry Stakeholder Group.
Elizabeth Finberg, Registry Stakeholder Group.
Brian Peck, ICANN staff.
Lars Hoffman, ICANN staff also.
Carlos Reyes from ICANN.
And Barry Cobb from ICANN. And one more over there, I believe.
Alexandra Schofield from the OECD.
I think we have everybody covered in the room. We've already mentioned the remote participants, and I'm sure that we will add more remote participants to the list should any further participants join. I would like to thank all of you for coming today to today's meeting. I think that, or my hope is that, a face-to-face meeting might be more productive because it's, you know, we have faces to voices on a telephone conference bridge, and I think that's always better than, you know, working together remotely. Nonetheless, surely our remote participants today are equally welcome to this meeting. It's unfortunately, or it's a pity that you can't be with us in person today. We have prepared a little deck of slides as an introduction, but I see that most people here have already read that or heard that. You know, to be quite honest, I have expected a huger number of observers or attendees that are completely new to this, that might have needed a little bit of introduction. So my proposal for the sake of time to you is that those who are not familiar with the background of our work and the approach that we've taken, please do stay in this room after this meeting, and I'm more than happy to show you through all this. But I guess for now we should focus on maybe looking at options for the group to proceed. As you will remember from the last telephone conference, I have sort of summarized where we are at the moment, and the situation seems to be like we are in a phase now where we've done all the fact-finding, all the participants have presented their views and explained the reasons as to why they think certain designations should be protected, and others have stated their concerns or have explained to the group why they think certain protections should not be granted. And my observation was that in this situation, where everybody is standing firm with their positions, we might end up having divergence, which is the absence of consensus, which is a potential outcome or a possible outcome of a policy development process. But I think I will refresh your memory on the potential outcomes of that to maybe trigger or stimulate the invention or negotiation of middle ground or consent or compromise positions that would be closer to consensus than what we have at the moment. You will note that at least for the IOC, the RCRC, and the IGOs, there is GAC advice in place. And on the basis of this GAC advice, the ICANN board has granted temporary protections for certain designations. Now, the organizations seeking protections might not have an interest in negotiating middle ground here because they feel safe with what they get through the GAC with the assistance of the ICANN board. I think that the report that we're going to publish hopefully soon will explain to the outside world that has not participated in our discussion the complexity of the matter, the legal complexity of things, the difficulties of not being perceived to be arbitrary in choosing criteria and so on and so forth. So I think that there are at least chances that the board, or maybe even the GAC, might choose not to perpetuate the protections they have granted temporarily. Those who are opposing protections might end up in a situation where the board does perpetuate those protections, and they might lose an opportunity to actually improve their situation by getting exemption procedures in place that are more beneficial, or maybe even reducing the scope of protections for the organizations in question. So by standing firm by everybody's positions and not compromising, we might end up in a situation that nobody around the table might like. Also, we might come to a situation where GAC advice is in place, and if we choose to say no to certain recommendations, then the board is faced with a situation where they have conflicting GAC advice and GNSO recommendations. And I'm not going to speculate towards which direction the ICANN board will lean. That's up for each of us to decide, but the outcome might not please everyone as well. I have taken a lot of attempts, I have made a lot of attempts to stimulate the discussion on compromises, and I think that other compromise solutions sort of have to come from the group. I will make one, if maybe not final, but I'm going to make one attempt today to encourage something which hopefully might be closer to consensus than what we have on the table so far, based on what I've heard from the GNSO Council as well as from the GAC during this weekend. But should we not be able to make substantial progress with this, the plan is to publish the initial report, and the draft version of the report has gone out to the list. I can talk about the report in a second. We had instant feedback from the IOC that I'm going to comment on briefly. But the idea is that we put out the report and allow for community input. It is possible in the PDP work that we're doing that we're not doing the consensus call now and present to the community our recommendations for public comment. But what we're going to do is we're going to explicitly state where we are and that we're awaiting public comment to then do a consensus call afterwards, which will hopefully stimulate further, you know, fresh ideas from the community that might help inform our further deliberations. So that's where we are at the moment. I would like to encourage you to read the very draft report. It has been prepared by Brian and Barry, and kudos to you for having done this enormous task in such a short period of time. It has been made very clear in the covering note that this is an early draft, and therefore we were cognizant of the fact that we did not reflect all the facets of our deliberations. So I have also identified a couple of areas that need to be that need to contain more information. So that's what we know. But we would like you to go through the report in the best case, prepare a markup version and add the bits that you think are necessary. What I have on my plate for adding is more reference to background material than there is at the moment. So there's going to be reference to comments that have been submitted earlier. There's going to be reference to the wiki that we have, because the intention of this PDP is to resolve the issue of IGO and INGO names once and for all. So I think the broader we encompass the scope of our deliberations in the report, the better it will be for the better it will serve the community for future requests for protection as a resource of information, that we have basically discussed everything that needs to be discussed there and that therefore no further policy work is required. But we might miss on that, or we might not be might not cover everything that you want into the report. So please take some time and inform us what needs to be go in there. Also, I will put more information in the into the report as to the approach that we've taken and the methodology that we have applied, because if the outcome should be one that is not beneficial to everybody, people will question how we did it. And I think, or I hope, you know, you might not all like where we are, but I hope that at least you have trust in the integrity of the process and trust in the fact that we have given everybody an opportunity to make themselves heard, that we have taken a lot of time to discuss the various positions, and that there were ample opportunities that I have, where I have encouraged the group to come up with further proposals or come up with compromise positions. So that, you know, in case this is going to be disappointing for some in terms of outcome, that at least we know that the process was carried out in an appropriate manner. Now, having said that, I would like to undertake another attempt to propose to you something which will hopefully be middle ground. We have learned in the meantime that the GAC has produced a list of designations that has been sent to the board, and there has been a response already by the board to the GAC. Unfortunately, this list is not available to us at the moment. David, I'm sure that you know the list. Is that something that you could share with us?
Absolutely.
Because I think it would be... David?
Are you sure it's not available yet? I saw it on the ICANN daily developments, the letter from the GAC to Fadi and Steve Crocker with two annexes. It has a list of about 190, 200 names.
That's the list that I was referring to, but as of yesterday, it was not published on the website. So we've reached out to ICANN staff and board members to help us with getting the list. But it's good that it's there. I think that, you know, now that we know that there is a list to look at, there is not the big unknown, dangerous 10,000 item list that people might be afraid of. So I think, you know, if we have it, Barry's already looking it up on the website, I guess we should put it on the screen for everybody to see. But I, you know, the observation that I made is that the GAC has produced this list to the board, and the expectation from the GAC is that not only the board but also the GNSO respects GAC advice in its policy making. That's one, and I think that we haven't emphasized this a lot during our discussions. You know, there is the clear expectation that the GNSO respects GAC advice, which primarily or exclusively is directed at the board, technically. The second observation is that some of us may have thought that this list that has been produced should feed the board in terms of temporary protections stemming from the board resolution. And we have discussed for hours and hours qualification criteria for certain organizations to sort of have a very generic methodology as to how a list can be populated. It is now the view of the GAC that this list that was created shall not be for the initial round, but that this list that has been produced shall be used on a permanent basis, and that the GAC might provide updated lists to the board from time to time. David, please.
Just as a point of information, the list is also accompanied by a chapeau which sets out the criteria which form the basis for the population of the list. So I think indeed, as we've, I suppose, from an IGO perspective maintained throughout this process, I think it would indeed be very helpful for this group to take the benefit not only of the contents of the list, but also the contents of the criteria that are proposed to accompany it for the purposes of our deliberations here.
Are these the criteria that you have shared with the working group previously?
They are, in essence, but they've been modified in certain key respects as a result of their journey through the GAC deliberative process. And the essentials of those criteria are now that from an IGO perspective, the GAC is advising the protection of IGO names and acronyms against unauthorised third-party registrations where these, and the criteria are organisations that are established under treaty or which are members, or which are present on the UN list of observers, or which are funds and programs of the UN. So these are the three criteria which form the basis of the contents of the list, which is, as David rightly indicated, and you can see it on the screen, is around 200. So you can see they're detailed, and included in it also is the name and the relevant acronym and the number that corresponds in the list. But I think if you go to page one, you can see the criteria are displayed there.
Thanks, David. That's very informative. I can't resist stating, though, that I guess the group would have appreciated to learn about these during one of our weekly calls. So I think that's unfortunate that we are the last group to know, although we are the ones that should work on this. Avery, please.
Yeah, just a quick question. So how long has this been actually going on in the GAC that they've been working on this, just out of curiosity?
Since Toronto, yes. Okay. The GAC advice, I think, the initial GAC advice was issued, I think, in the weeks immediately after Toronto. And the list, and the initial list, I think, was submitted to the board December of last year.
So this is one of those parallel policy tracks the GAC was talking about in the meeting the other day.
Yeah, exactly. But I do just want to be clear for the record as well that certainly from our perspective on the IGO side, I think we've been clear and consistent in our references to that GAC process and about the utility of using the criteria and the list generated as a result of that as a feed point into our deliberations here. We haven't seen the list or injected the list into the discussion so far, but it is a parallel process that I think we've all been pretty familiar with. Here are the criteria up on the screen.
I have Alain and then Chuck.
Yeah, I haven't had a chance to go through the entire list, but from what I've seen, it's actually, as it says, they're international organizations created by treaties with states signing up to an international agreement. But it'd be interesting to run down to see if some of the better known names are there or not.
Chuck.
I have a question. I don't know if anybody knows the answer to this. David might. I see on that list full organization names and acronym names. Is it the intent that the acronyms would also be protected?
Yes, it's very much the intent that the acronyms would also be protected. So the preclusion would be against third-party registrations at the second level in the current round that correspond either to the full name or to the acronym. And obviously it's the acronym that would more typically be the subject of a potential claim for registration. So protection there would of course be sought.
I'm speaking mostly, this is Chuck again, I'm speaking mostly personally because we still have to vet this within the registry stakeholder group and David Maher will be our representative in representing the ultimate registry's position. But I can tell you there has been concern about acronyms because you're really closing off a lot of possibilities when you do acronyms. Company names, just non-profit organization names that aren't governmental entities and so forth. There are going to be so many matches for those that I guess I'm just raising a red flag. I suspect from our perspective, I like the idea of a finite list, exact matches of those organizational names. I personally do. I'm not yet speaking for the registry stakeholder group. But you start adding acronyms, and I think we're going to run into a problem in the registry stakeholder group because of how many organizations throughout the world in different jurisdictions will have the same acronym. And in some cases, those acronyms are probably better known, at least in the local jurisdiction, than the international governmental organization acronym.
Thanks, Chuck. I have Kira next.
Just a question about this qualification criteria and how that would inform our deliberations in the working group and the qualification criteria for all of the names that we are considering. I would assume that this list that we're looking at would only inform the qualification criteria for IGOs. Am I correct?
That is my understanding. I've just received confirmation that this communication has been published on ICANN's website last night, so we didn't really have a chance. I've reached out to board members and ICANN staff to get hold of the communication. It was not possible, obviously, so I think we're in an unfortunate situation to be the last to know.
Just as a quick follow-up to that, the reason why we would advocate for that position would be because insofar as it relates to acronyms, we know that the IOC and the Red Cross are not asking for their acronyms to be protected, and I think this would kind of further inform our suggestion in our email from yesterday to develop distinct and separate sets of qualification criteria for the different organizations that we're deliberating within the context of this group. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Now, David.
I just wanted to make a couple of points in connection with this latest iteration of the list that was submitted only towards the very end of last month. But in response to some of the points that Chuck briefly touched upon, and I note he's now out of the room. The principal purpose, I suppose, that underlined the provision of the advice by the GAC on the criteria, of course, took account of the fact that IGOs are organisations that are entities that engage in work of a public nature, pursuant to their status under international law, and that status under international law provides for protection both of the name and of the acronym of the corresponding organisation where that's claimed. The second is just to note a point which was mentioned earlier, which is that the list is not an extensive one when viewed against the number of potential domain name registrations that are available in a vastly expanded DNS. We're talking here about a list of about 200 IGOs and about 200 acronyms in particular. And thirdly, just to note that the YAC advice does contemplate a mechanism to manage the possibility of legitimate coexistence in circumstances where it is identified to exist. And that mechanism is through the vehicle of the agreement or the consent of the relevant IGO itself to the use that could be made potentially of domain names that correspond to names or acronyms. So there is a mechanism there by which a prospective registrant could approach an IGO and seek to use a domain name that corresponded to an acronym. In circumstances where that request would be reasonable, of course it would not be a request that IGOs would anticipate refusing.
Thanks, David. That's helpful. I should also mention that there has been a response to this letter by the ICANN board that raises three questions, one of which is related to acronyms. I think that, you know, since we only learned about these criteria now, it's not really possible for the group to discuss them. Period. I guess what I'm trying to do now, or the thoughts that I wanted to share with you, are the following. I think that now, knowing that there is a limited number of designations that is on the list, the group might be willing to consider an option whereby we save ourselves the trouble of establishing criteria. You know, I think the biggest problem for us was to come up with objective criteria for who should be eligible to certain protection mechanisms. If the GAC sticks to this list, then, you know, that list could be a qualification criterion. So we might be able to say protections are granted, and I'm talking about exact match names now, I'm not discussing acronyms. This list could be taken, and whoever is on that list produced by the GAC to the board will be eligible to protection mechanisms. What these could be, we're going to discuss in a second. I think it's different for the acronyms, so let's please discuss this separately. For the top level, I guess one might envisage an option whereby the exact match names are put on a reserved names list. We have not seen any application from any of the organizations being IOC, RCRC, or IGOs. You know, we can only talk about these three now, because the fourth certainly would not be covered by the GAC advice, so we would need to continue our deliberations on INGOs. But so please do bear in mind, I'm talking about these three now. So we could reserve the names, the exact match names of these organizations. And the easiest way for, you know, if the IGOs say we need an exemption procedure to apply for top level domains, would be that they would go through the GAC again. So that would save us the trouble, us as a community, would save us the trouble of crafting an exemption process for that. Just thinking out loudly and trying to be pragmatic. I guess it would be up to the representatives of the various organizations to say, well, no, that would be too cumbersome, so speak up now, or, you know, send that comment to the list very shortly. But I think in the absence of that need for an exemption process at the top level, it might be good enough just to put these 200 names in bold letters, names on the reserved names list, so nobody can access them. I'm not sure whether we would have any conflicting legitimate third-party use of the organization's names. So we can go through the list and have that double-checked, but in case that weren't the case, reservation of the exact match names might be the easiest solution. For the second level, I think not the exact copy of that approach could apply, because I think it's quite likely that at least some of the three categories of organizations might choose to have a second level registration in certain TLDs. So we would need a protection mechanism, or the idea that I want to inject into your brains is have a protection mechanism with an exemption process for the organizations in question, so block them and the organizations can get access to them. Again, only talking about exact match names. And I think it would be for us to double check whether there might be legitimate users of the IGO's names. At least for, we've extensively discussed the cases of the IOC, and there were concerns with legitimate third-party use of Olympic Paint or Olympic Airlines and stuff like that, but they would be using Olympic, and I think you've asked for protection of Olympia and Olympiad. So, we wouldn't have an issue with that even. But that, you would need to double-check that. So my suggestion for a package would be that I get to you in a second, that there could be identical string protections at the second level with exemptions for the organizations themselves to get access to those names. And before I move to acronyms, I will give the opportunity to Kieran to comment.
Just a point of clarification, Olympic and Olympiad are the two words.
Okay, so then the exemption process would need to be extended to third-party use for exact match names as well. I think that for acronyms, the situation is more complicated. This has been part of our discussions. I think the reason why I'm making this proposal now, or at least try to stimulate a further discussion to find middle ground, is that I think the least concerns for freedom of expression are with exact match names of the organizations, at least for the most part. I think the biggest concerns are with acronyms. So if we sort of move towards protections for the exact match names, I hope that there might be flexibility in return for acronyms, where I think the biggest number of organizations in question is not, having an acronym that, talking in trademark terms, would even be protectable because it's too generic. And I think that the danger of confusion is also less present for acronyms than for the organization's exact match names. I see your head. See you, David, shaking your head. I saw Avery shaking her head as well. I guess that I don't have the illusion of unifying us in a couple of minutes, but I just wanted to share some thoughts with you as to how we might come closer to something which might resemble consensus. For the acronyms, from what I heard everybody say, maybe an option could be to open the TMCH for acronyms, which would have the benefit for the organizations in question to participate in Sunrise. And if there is no other party requesting that specific acronym, they would get the name without having competitors, basically. If there were another eligible party having an entry in the TMCH, there would be a contention set between the respective organization and the rights holder that is also in the trademark clearinghouse. And the resolution of that contention would be up to the contention resolution mechanisms of the respective registry. So there would be a level playing field for the acronyms that might be descriptive only. which I think is important for those that have objective to protections. And if the organization does not choose to participate in a sunrise, then the name might actually be freed up for general availability. But that clearly also shows that the organization does not perceive the need to use or need to protect the acronym in that specific namespace. I wanted to share these ideas with you. I've seen a lot of facial reactions to that already, so I hope that we're going to enter into an interesting discussion now. Please.
Yes, hi, Alexandra Escoffier from the OECD. I just wanted to make one small point about what you said about acronyms and the possibility to trademark them. As it works currently for names and acronyms of international organizations in almost every jurisdiction in the world, they are protected in a way which, under trademark laws in most cases, which can prevent a trademark holder or can prevent an individual or an entity from registering a trademark with the same or similar name or acronym. And how it has worked on occasion, because it's not often that it happens, but it does happen occasionally that there are other entities which want to register the same names, they request for the IGO, this has happened to the OECD several times, or our entities, a letter which says that we don't object to the other party registering the trademark. And so far, there's not been an objection, but I know of one case of another IGO where there has been an objection where there was clearly a conflicting business, in quotes, because IGOs are not really business, but, you know, a conflicting activity. And this is how it works for trademarks. So it is, the acronyms are protected under trademark law. That's only the point I wanted to make, because you did mention that perhaps even under trademark laws, the acronyms could not be protected. And they are. Thank you.
6ter of the Paris Convention prevents from, only protects against commercial use. So there are no absolute protections for names and acronyms even. Maybe we should leave the pure legal side out of the equation for the moment, because I think what we can do as a policymaking effort, we can step away from that. We've heard from General Counsel that the legal situation is not as clear as some of us might have hoped to get to a solution more easily. I get your point, but I think that your point also illustrates that you shouldn't be that afraid of this TMCH proposal, because you know that those that have corresponding trademarks are those that you have already granted the permit to use a special designation. So, there might be even less potential for conflict at that in that phase. Do we have more people that want to speak? David, please.
Thanks very much, Thomas. I think that the suggestion that you made earlier about scope for forward movement on the issue of names is a constructive one, and I think it's certainly one that IGOs in general would support, subject to the caveat that from the perspective of acronyms, this is an area in which we would, I think, need to continue to pursue our objectives in this discussion of securing protection against inappropriate registrations, and that while I think we are certainly very open to having discussions about mechanisms for managing the coexistence issue, including potentially through the clearinghouse, these would need to be discussions that we would need to see the consent of the IGO itself to any sort registrations playing a foundational key. And I think we'd be very open to talking about pragmatic mechanisms to achieve that effect. But for us, given our understanding of the protections that we enjoy, that would need to be a part of the discussion. And I think it's important from our perspective that we are, although our names and acronyms are protected under trademark law, IGOs, of course, are not trademark owners as such, for the reasons that I mentioned in my introductory intervention. So,
David, David, before I move to Alan, I would just like to translate what you were just saying to from a negotiating perspective. You welcome the first two proposals, which are exactly what you asked for. So I'm not surprised you agree with them. And for the third, you say that we need to shape it in a way that you need to consent to every use of the acronym, which is also exactly what you've been asking for. So it's not really a compromise that you're stimulating. You know, I guess that we might need to see a little bit, you know, more of the willingness to be, or more flexibility on acronyms. I guess that's what I'm trying to say. I hear your point, and I understand that this is more or less the reconfirmation of the position that you have voiced earlier, but I think that we're now in a stage where, you know, we need to try to move a little bit more. That's just an observation you know, if we want to rank the likelihood of acceptance inside this group, I think there needs to be a little bit more. You know, just a thought. Alan, please.
A comment and a question. In terms of consent, I know from my organization's point of view, I think I can speak on behalf of ALAC without asking them first on this one. Consent would have to be either given or not given within a period of a modest period of time, or no answer defaults with consent. Because otherwise it's too easy to just stonewall and not answer. So I'm just putting that on the table, that if consent ends up being part of the equation, there has to be timeouts associated with it. The second is a little bit of clarity, because maybe I'm just not awake enough. Are we talking about blocking these names, whether it's acronyms or not, whatever we're talking about? Are we talking about blocking, or are we talking about trademark? You know, trademark clearinghouse type use with a claims notice. I have a follow-up question, but I need the answer first.
Yes. The proposal that I put on the table would be what you would call blocking with an exception mechanism for the exact match names and use of the trademark clearinghouse more or less on an as-is basis for the acronyms, which means possibility to participate in Sunrise. But if you don't, it's open for registration, and you would have the claims notice for the initial 90 days. One could certainly envisage extending that, but the idea was as a compromise position, to grant the block for the exact match names, because that's less contentious, and have more flexibility with the acronyms.
Okay. If you look at the attachment to the board's reply to the GAC, they have a huge laundry list of organizations which may not have trademarked the 3 or 4 or 2-letter acronym, but use it as a means of identifying themselves. So, again, whatever words we might put in the permission list, it's got to be, you can't, the IGO cannot simply say no if the organization wants to use an acronym which is normally associated with it and is not trying to masquerade as the IGO. I think we're going to end up having to put real words around this. Otherwise, it's too easy to abuse.
Well, just to be clear, what I proposed was to only have the names on the list. And it's up for the organizations then to go to the clearinghouse, which we would entitle them to, or we would make a recommendation that the acronyms can be put into the TMCH.
You're saying only block the names, the full names, not the acronyms.
That's the, you know, that's what I perceived, having listened to all of you for many months, as potential middle ground.
Okay. I eagerly await someone trying to register the full name for UNICEF as a domain name.
But that was the primary concern, which was addressed in GAC advice. This is why
noted. I find this whole discussion surreal.
We can discuss that further over a beer.
I agree. This is David Roach Turner from WIPO. I agree wholeheartedly with that characterization and the suggestion for a beer. Perhaps it would help liberate some of our discussions. But I also would like to respond to the first point that Alan made, which is that I think from an IGO perspective, we are very open to having discussions about the period and the reasonableness of the period in which a response, whether positive or negative, would need to be provided to a prospective registrant of a domain which corresponds precisely to an IGO acronym. I also agree very much that really from a realistic, real-world perspective, we're talking here principally about the acronyms. The vast majority of IGOs, certainly that are engaged in the IGO coalition in this discussion process, brand principally through their acronym. The formal name is something that appears in treaty documents, but so often they're so unwieldy and lengthy that they're very rarely used in a real-world context.
Thank you, David. I have Avri next.
Thank you. Avri Doria speaking. First, I wanted to explain why I was shaking my head. The idea of somebody injecting thoughts into it really was something I needed to shake my head at. I find the idea of adding names to the reserve list sort of abhorrent, but I could almost live with it. If it was a universal, if people really insist on a block and they get the GAC and the board to agree that blocking those names is the right thing to do, then, you know, at a certain point, it may really be time to surrender and say, yep, names on a reserve list, no one can use them, they're sacred and get special privilege because of the various conditions that have been defined as somehow important to the GAC and the board has bought into it. The idea of creating a special category of reserve names that gives the privilege of giving somebody the permission to allow names to go off it is something that I think I would rail against until the end of my days, because I don't see any way to prevent it from being gamed into a backdoor licensing situation. Now, I have tried to think about how could that possibly be created, that somebody has permission to let somebody off the privilege list without it being possible to game it, understanding where it ICANN. If there is a way to game something, it will be gamed. There's absolutely no doubt about that. That's one of the certainties of this. And so I think that is sort of a critical thing to me, that the whole, any notion that contains an entity having permission to say, nope, I suspend my privilege and allow you to register the name, just is has to be a non-starter, because this is ICANN and that is our reality. The whole notion of the giving these names the same sort of privileges that we give trademarks is something that I've become more amenable to over time, and it's something I would have a hard time convincing my stakeholder group of, but that notion is sort of, well, we're already giving it to people that have trademarks, and I think trademarks, the legitimacy of trademarks and the legitimacy of these names is pretty much about the same. So if we're going to offer that kind of privilege to trademarks, I can see sort of a sort of relative notion that says, yeah, why not? It's not unreasonable to offer that same kind of privilege to someone whose name is marked by an intergovernmental agreement, as opposed to paying some money to a registration group in some country. So that I could almost see a way to. I'm not sure that I could convince the stakeholder group of these positions, but when you're looking for what kinds of things could even be considered, I think, you know, you really insist on having something blocked, it is blocked for everyone for all time until the reserve list gets modified. you insist that you deserve privileges, the same privileges as a trademark. That's arguable. But the creation of a new category of thing that is complicated and has permissions to enforce the privilege versus not enforcing the privilege, I think that is far too complex a new creation at this point or any point. So that's sort of when you're looking for where I have sort of a compromise point, that's kind of how it falls.
Avery, just a follow-up question. Would your concerns apply to both the top as well as the second level?
For the licensing of my privilege to another?
Yes.
Yeah. In other words, I think doing that at the top level... I see it pretty much as the same. Let's see, if we basically are saying a name shouldn't be in the DNS, then the name shouldn't be in the DNS.
Yes, I just need to understand the position correctly. So you're saying that it would not be acceptable to have a list of the likes of United Postal Union to be freed up for the respective organization?
Yeah, correct. I'm saying once you ask for the name to be blocked, it is blocked. Good. You can go for .post if you want, but or a name that works for your group, that remains open to anyone. So just like the UPU went for something other than .upu,
good.
Someone else could go for a name other than their name that they were getting for their community as or their group. I don't see that prevents them from getting a top-level domain name in a later round because they can come up with a word that's not one of the blocked words. Mm-hmm. And they can apply for it in that sense. So, yeah.
Well, we have a queue. I'd like the organizations that have asked for protections to maybe chime in and respond to that. Maybe there is no need for this exemption process. And we will get back to the second level then in a moment. Please...
Hi, Elizabeth Thinberg, Public Interest Registry. I have a question about if we were to open up the clearinghouse such that the acronyms would be capable of being entered into the clearinghouse, do you envision an extended claims notice period, or would they simply get the 90 days that a trademark would get?
To be quite honest, I have thought of the easiest possible solution, which would be just allowing for entries in the trademark clearinghouse. I think the organizations in question, at least those that suffer from abusive registrations, have monitoring services in place anyway, so I think they would not hugely benefit from an extension of the claim service. But that's just a personal thought. And talking about thoughts, I'd like to respond to Avery briefly that it shouldn't have sounded like indoctrination if I spoke about injecting ideas. You know, maybe that's just a language issue. You know, so shouldn't sound that martial. You're right. I have Kieran next.
Kieran Mellon-Charyville, for the record, in response to Avery's concern that this is ICANN, so people will abuse the system. I would suggest. On the other side, that this is ICANN, and we can put our heads together and solve the problem that you see. And I think that what has happened here is Jim Bykoff a few weeks back in a group meeting suggested that we might create a system in which we sanction organizations that are found to be abusing the system as far as creating an exception procedure and obtaining a letter of non-objection is concerned. And I think this is one of those suggestions that slips through the cracks of this group. It was ignored to the detriment of reaching the compromise that we so desperately seek, as Thomas stated in the beginning. And maybe we should revisit that as possibly addressing some of those concerns. Thank you.
Thank you, Kieran. Please, Alexandra.
Thank you. I hadn't thought about your your idea of monetizing it, because for as far as IGOs, and I could speak, I think, for IGOs, the permissions we would grant would be on a free basis. It would not be licensing. This is what's happening with trademarks. We never ask for any compensation. And also another point of the reserves names, there is currently in the applicant handbook for the other reserved names, whether it's country names or ICANN names or a similar process, a process of consent. It is always possible to register a country name or it with the consent of that government. So I would think, I don't think that the government would, I'm not speaking for the government, but would ask for compensation. I don't know. In any case, we didn't even think of it. So you see how non-commercial we are, because we didn't even think of that. But I think that the only reason that we're proposing a coexistence process is that we recognize that there might be entities with the same acronyms who may legitimately want to use that, and if it does not, if it's not abusive or conflicting to our acronyms, it hasn't posed a problem so far under trademark. So it should not pose a problem for the DNS. Thank you.
Alexandra, your point is well heard. You know, just to finish our discussion for the top level, you know, I guess that once you're on the reserve names list, it would require a so-called RCEP procedure to get hold of that name. So I guess the question that we need to answer first, pragmatically, is whether you think that any IGO in the IGO coalition is interested in applying for a TLD. If none of them is, then we can just reserve them and we don't need to worry about exemption procedures. Maybe even we think that as a group that the risk of abusive TLD applications for exact match names, you know, imagine a third party taking $185,000 to abusively try to get the TLD.UnitedPostalUnion as an exact match name, if we think that there is no such risk or that the risk is sufficiently low, we might revert to the proposal that is already in the initial report and maybe consider giving the organizations that would benefit from our policy recommendations, should there be any, treat them as ALEC or the GAC and allow them to make objections without fees. So that in the unlikely case that something happens, they would be able to object against the application, which would address Avery's concern, because then there wouldn't be any reservation in the first place. So maybe you can share some instant feedback on that with us. You know, would you? I'm not sure whether any of you would like to chime in.
Instant feedback is, we'd have to consult. But at the top level, for the name, it might be something which is considered, but we'd have to consult that with. And I'm not sure we could speak for all IGOs. We could certainly discuss with our coalition, which includes, as you know, some of the major ones. But any other IGOs have ideas?
So I have David and then Alan.
Thanks, Thomas. David Rhodes Turner, WIPO, for the record. Just a point of clarification, which is that the formulation of the GAC advice, which we saw up on the screen earlier, was drafted in quite a particular way to take account of the possibility that there may be some IGOs which would want to register at the top level, and there certainly is one IGO at least that is invested in the current round of new GTLDs which has made an application to obtain a top level registration, which is CERN. And so the language that we see used in that formulation is quite specific, because it precludes third party registrations either at the top or the second level for that reason. I think from WIPO's perspective, the proposal that you just made would not be problematic, because I think from our organisation's perspective, we don't envisage bidding in future GTLD rounds. But I think, as Alexandra mentioned, we need to engage in some consultation with the group more generally.
I would just like to ask a question. You were talking about the full name, or were you talking about also the acronym for the top?
For the moment, I'm talking about the full name.
Okay.
I think we have to slice our discussion, because otherwise the discussion is becoming too complicated. Ellen?
2 points. It dawns on me that if we, assuming we're talking about acronyms, if we put a rule in saying no one else can register the acronym at the top level, but they can, we better be careful with the wording, because we do have two-letter acronyms, which are forbidden for other reasons. So just an interesting thought. I'm in the unusual position for me of speaking not on behalf of, but from a point of view of registrars. Registrars have said a number of times, and I'm in no position to explain any background, but have said that claims notices that go on forever are really problematic, particularly with the reseller model. So we better be careful about saying, yes, but we want a 300-day claims notice. There may be a problem there. And number two, as Avery alluded to, this concept of you can register it, but first you have to get permission is a brand new, at the second level, is a brand new concept that is not in any of our registration models and registrar models as it stands today. That is, let's put it on hold for 3 weeks while we send a letter to someone. The concept of implementing this for this relatively small number of names sounds like a really, I won't say outrageous, but a really, really difficult thing to do, an expensive thing to do. Thank you.
Just in terms of structuring our discussion, I would like you to consult with your coalition as to whether there's the possibility of further pursuing the thought of not reserving, but maybe giving a free waiver for objections for the top level. Because in that case, the IGOs themselves could apply for TLDs, and they would still have the option to get rid of abusive TLD registrations, which I think, you know, might be an option. Second option that I'd like everybody to think about is whether we should envisage a registration, a reservation without crafting an exemption procedure, which certainly would require some level of certainty on the side of the beneficiaries of the program that they might not apply for their TLD, you know, because it's too cumbersome, or the name's too long, whatever. You know, checking against the list that is now on the table might be the exercise to get a quick result to that. I'd like to leave the... Oh, please.
Thank you. Charlotte Lindsay from the ICSC. I have from the International Committee of the Red Cross, on behalf of the Red Cross Red Crescent, just have a number of points that I would like to raise in relation to the proposal put forward. Firstly, we would want to ensure that any decision doesn't affect the moratorium and ensures the protection is permanent that has already been accorded. Secondly, that if we would want a modified reserve list to ensure that in line with the indicative use, which is granted under the Geneva Conventions of 1949 for the national entities. Thirdly, that there is the licensing is not an issue for the Red Cross Red Crescent movement. There are the number of entities which are authorized to use the names are limited. It's finite. And determined. They have to be recognized by the International Committee of the Red Cross and the International Federation of Red Cross. Fourthly, we note the definition or the examination that has been given towards these names for the IGO list. We have not seen this definition, would need to examine it a bit more closely, but we're curious to understand why the definition is not the same as the one that was enshrined in the applicant's guidebook, which was would have captured under that the names of at least the two international organization components of the Red Cross and Red Crescent movement, namely the International Committee of the Red Cross and the International Federation of Red Cross and Red Crescent. Lastly, it's interesting to look at this two-pronged approach, and we appreciate the reflection that's gone into that. Particularly, we would want to ensure that there are curative rights mechanisms to catch any string similarities, acronyms, that are recognized and enshrined, and the names of the national bodies of the Red Cross, Red Crescent movement, which would require to be protected, and a waiver of the fees in that regard. Thank you.
Thank you for refreshing our memory on the RCRC expectations. The criteria that you find here are clearly for IGOs. So, and we are not in any way confined to what is currently in the applicant guidebook. In fact, we're trying to come up with policy recommendations to replace what's currently in the applicant guidebook. I think that I think we should use the remainder of time to discuss protections at the second level. And again, we're talking about exact match names and then the acronyms. Maybe to start with the exact match names, we heard a lot of concerns about merely protecting those names without, you know, or reserving those names without an exception procedure for the organizations in question. But then complexity has been added to that, for example, with the Olympic term, where a legitimate third-party use might even exist for an exact match of a designation that might go on a list. We heard concerns about the licensing scheme, and I think regardless, I think the term licensing scheme is not appropriate in this case. I think what is the fundamental issue that certain members of the working group have with such concept is that approval has to be sought with the organization that has protections, and that they claim that if there is legitimate third-party use, no such approval for using a certain acronym, for example, would be required in the first place. And therefore, my question to the organizations that have been looking for protections is whether you would be open to discussions to not leave the determination or the approval to the organization in question, but to an independent third party. I guess that could take some of the pressure away from our discussions. Kieran.
Thank you, Thomas. This is Kieran Mellon-Charuville. As our team drafted the potential exemption procedure on the second level, I feel the need to just clarify one point. I don't think at any point did we say that the only way in which organizations or parties with a legitimate interest in the word would be able to register is by going through the organization itself. We offered that option as the easiest and cheapest way, aka the free way, in which a party could get a letter of non-objection quickly and without any problems. As we've stated before, and we will state again, in no way will we solicit any kind of licensing or fees or anything like that for those parties which have an established legitimate interest in the names or really anyone else. So we put that forth as an option, the first option. And if organizations were uncomfortable with that, or if we established that there wasn't a legitimate interest, third-party interest, then we gave the group a very comprehensive starting-off point for different options in which a third-party evaluator would be able to evaluate the legitimate interest. So I think it's a slight mischaracterization to say that we ever said that the only way in which a legitimate third party could register was through the organization's permission. Thank you.
Kieran, just a point of clarification. I did not in any way suggest that you were not flexible with that. I think with your ongoing contributions to the group, and in particular the ideas that you have crafted for an exemption procedure, you have indicated that there would be flexibility. Despite the fact that you have indicated there is flexibility, there have been no further responses from the working group as to that they would like to pick the other option. right? So I think that was the response that was missing. And since this concern is resurfacing almost in every discussion, I think we should take this concern as a starting point to just bluntly ask the question whether those seeking protections would be open or support a compromise position whereby the exemptions are vetted or evaluated by third party and not approval is granted by the organization in question itself. So I think that's homework. Again, I'm sure that you can't answer that right now, but let's please discuss and consider an exemption procedure whereby an independent third party evaluates whether there is a legitimate third party use, and if there is legitimate third party use, then a registration request can proceed, you know, in whatever fashion that's going to be implemented ultimately. And if no such legitimate use can be determined, then it would fail. Alan?
I'll just point out that ICANN typically implements things at no cost to ICANN. Therefore, if it's a third party, either it's going to be paid for by the IGOs through some sort of levy or something, or paid for by the requester, which I think would raise a whole bunch of issues quite akin to licensing.
Alan, thank you for that remark. I think that it's always good when discussing policy to have the implementation in mind. Nonetheless, I think we should try to think out of the box and try to find mechanisms that could suit the needs of most parts of the community. I have Kieran and David.
Sorry, just a quick question. A couple of weeks ago, there was some discussion about using the RCEP as part of the exemption procedure, and I guess I think it was Chuck. Is Chuck still in here? He's not. It was Chuck Gomes who said that he was going to get back to the group about the possibility of that, because most of us who are not in the contracted party's house don't actually know how the RCEP works and how it might work to inform an exception procedure. So since our team, in particular David Heasley, is drafting the exemption procedure as best as he can, it would be helpful to get that information. I don't want that to fall through the cracks. Thank you.
This is Barry with ICANN. I'll send out a link to the list of the RCEP documentation, and it does have some summary information about what that process is like. But just to reiterate that it's not an overnight process. It's very lengthy and detailed and may not necessarily be suitable for something that matches the proposal that was supplied by the IOC.
Thanks, Barry.
David.
Thanks, Thomas. David Roach-Turner from WIPO for the record. Just two points and a question. The first is I agree with Alan that there will be certain challenges, I think, as we go down the path, if we go down the path of mechanisms that are fee-based and that involve cost. The second point is I think it is desirable, to the extent that we are able to keep any process that we do design as simple and low cost as we possibly can. I think that that's important. And the third is just a question, Thomas, with respect to your proposal. I just want to clarify with you that when you gave us the homework to think about whether or not a mechanism is something that we could work with, a third-party independent based mechanism, whether you would envisage that operating only after there has been the preliminary phase of the prospective registrant approaching the IGO with a request and receiving a response from them in reply to that request. Obviously, if the IGO gives their consent, there's no issue. And if they don't give their consent, then there might be a question to be discussed about whether or not we would want a process that then followed that. But I think from a practical and efficiency-based perspective, it does make sense to make the first port of call the relevant organisation to seek that approval, and only if it would be withheld to then think about the need for a slightly more complicated procedure to follow that.
To be quite honest, I think that I would be open to any suggestion that's broadly supported. The mechanism that you're suggesting that you go to the organization in question first, because that might be the quickest and most cost-efficient approach. I sympathize with that. However, I think that chances for that to be broadly supported are lower than having a process where the wannabe registrant doesn't need to go to the organization in question, because it would be perceived. I think that the crux is that you have to go to the organization, because what you're describing, the two-prong approach, would be just to have a sort of an appeal process in case the organization doesn't give approval. And I think that might be perceived by those that do not subscribe to the concept of the organization giving approval, the impression that the registrant or the prospective registrant is put in a less fortunate situation. This is just guessing, so let's put that out to the group. And if I may, I'd like to ask you to maybe put that in a couple of sentences and send it to the group to, you know, just as a, you know, you don't have to formulate it as a WIPO proposal, but just another facet that could facilitate our discussion. But I think whatever is easy should be on our plate for consideration. I guess the remaining few minutes that we have, unless you all say that we should go on for a little bit longer, I'm not sure whether that would be possible logistically. I think we need to get back to the question of acronyms. I think that the acronyms are where the most pressure is. You know, the organizations in question, apart from the IOC, which has made clear that they are not going for the acronym, but the other three types of organizations have asked for acronym protection, and I think that this is where the contention is. Avery suggested that she might sympathize with the thought of putting your designations or the designations that are listed on a level playing field with trademarks. Is that something that you have given any consideration? The effect of that would be that you wouldn't get a block on those names, but that you could get access to the protection mechanisms that are in place and that will be set up for the new GTLDs with the acronyms as well, which would be a combination of the use of Sunrise, Trademark Claims Notice, URS and UDRP. So it would be a mixture of preventive and curative mechanisms that you could then use.
This is David from WIPO. Just to better understand that, what would be the preventative aspect of that proposal just made? I understand the curative aspects, but what is the preventative component of Avery's proposal? Because I'm not sure that I heard it.
The preventative mechanism, at least that's the way how it is circumscribed in the ICANN documentation, would be participation in the TMCH.
I think from an IGO perspective, that would probably not be sufficient to meet the types of protections that we're seeking here, because those protections are based essentially on a preventive approach. The Trademark Clearinghouse is, as you say, essentially a Sunrise, which is a defensive registration, which requires obviously an expenditure of money to make the registration and to secure it, and a maintenance of a payment for that purpose for each domain name that conflicts. And all of the other mechanisms are cost-based procedures, the URS, the UDRP, which currently doesn't apply to IGOs, for example. So I think it's an important component of the protection that we're seeking, that the registration by third parties be precluded. I think we're very open to the continuing discussions that we've been having here today about mechanisms to manage potential coexistence, in which we would want to see the consent of the relevant IGO playing a key part. I think we're also very open to discussions potentially about mechanisms in which independent third parties might be able to make determinations on that as well, provided that they were sufficiently simple and cost-effective to operate.
Time's up. Unless you want to go on, I'm not sure whether that's possible for you. I would like to use the... Mary, sorry, please.
Hello, and sorry for coming in so late. I was trying to participate through Adobe Connect while being a panelist in a different session. Just don't tell my other session. So this is a question for the group, which I actually put into Adobe, and I don't know if there's a good time if it was discussed, but this goes back to the GAC letter, or the letter from Heather to Steve and Steve's reply. And given the timelines that we're looking at, and given the fact that the board committee will respond formally to the GAC, I wonder if it would be a good idea, I think it would be, for this group to request a meeting with the board's committee prior to that deadline and prior to us issuing our report. I think it might be informative for both sides, especially to the board if we do that.
That point is well noted. I think that, you know, we should see communication. We will take care of that and make sure that we offer the opportunity for such discussion. Stefan.
Just wanted to add one point to the discussion. One of them is indeed, I think it's come up in the discussion here that we could have or there could be an option for a two-prong approach, right? There would be, first of all, in line with the current moratorium for the Red Cross, Red Crescent, and the IOC names, inscription on a modified reserve domain list. That would be the first prong, and then there would be a potentially second prong, which would be access to curative rights mechanisms foreseen at top and second level, potentially to cover acronyms which indeed raise a number of sui generis issues. But I wanted to add to that if, you know, a facilitated access to such mechanisms was afforded, this is the second prong, then that might also address the concern with regard to imitations and strings confusingly similar, which, you know, we understand is in itself, you know, a complex issue to deal with, especially at the second level. But if indeed, you know, there is, as regards this, you know, in addition to the modified reserve list protections, if there is a facilitated access to those procedures, then, you know, that would allow the organizations to take proper action when strings confusingly similar are undertaken. For that purpose, there would be two issues. One of them would be a waiver of fees, but it would also be to ensure the standing of the respective organizations to be able to activate the procedures concerned, which I think is in itself a question. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Stefan. And actually, you've been referring, and this is the encouraging new message that I want you to take home. The opening of existing and future RPMs, I guess, is the point where we have closest to consensus on. And I think that we should expand this consensus to other areas. I do hope that you have some food for thought to take home to your respective groups and organizations. We will continue our discussion next Wednesday. Shall we do the 17th, or do you want... I'm not sure how you're doing in terms of travel. Can we make that? Because that's quite close to this meeting.
Not Wednesday as in day after tomorrow, right?
No, not tomorrow. next week. Let's keep the 17th, and should you not be comfortable with that date, please send an email to the list, and if there are a lot of people that can't make it, then we might cancel in the last minute. I thank you all for your participation and your interest. I will stay here for a couple more minutes. For those who want to give me the introductory talk that we skipped, I'm available. Thank you very much.